You're listening to Holder Tonight with Peter Anthony Holder on Montreal's News Talk Leader, CJAD 800.
Peter Anthony Holder here with you on CJAD. Still to come on the program after the 1 o'clock news, when we're joined by our sister station, CFRB 1010 Toronto, we'll talk to Jonathan Ahrens, the trombone dancer. If you have been watching America's Got Talent, you may have seen him up until about 2 weeks ago. Actually, last week, he got bounced from that show. But we'll find out what the experience was like for him and just how one becomes a trombone dancer. It looked tiring and looked painful, by the way. But anyway, we'll talk to him. We'll also meet the author of Jumpstart Your Life, 7 Steps to Waking Up from the Sleepwalking Mode. And Leslie Torburn is the author of Stop the Stress Habit, Change Your Perceptions and Improve Your Health. Plus, we'll meet Darren Taylor, Professor Splash. He is a high dive stuntman, dives from a high height into like a wading pool, a baby pool of water. And this is going to get him in the Guinness Book of Records. It also gives him a world of hurt, is what it's been giving him, but he's doing it anyway. That's coming up a little later on here on CJD and CFRB. But right now, joining us on the program is John Kalbfleisch, who is, among other things, a longtime Montreal journalist. You can see his weekly column in the Montreal Gazette called Second Draft. But he's also the author of a new book called This Island in Time, Remarkable Tales from Montreal's Past. And by the way, there's an event taking place. It's coming up this Wednesday at the Westmount Public Library, which is 4574 Sherbrooke Street in Westmount. There is basically a book launching, and John will be there, and it starts at 7 p.m., but John is with us on the program right now. Hi, John. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Very well.
Thank you for calling. Thanks for being on the program with us.
How can I help you?
Well, you can tell us about the book. Let's start with the subtitle, Remarkable Tales from Montreal's Past. Montreal has a great past. Not a lot of people know about it, though, but you search it out.
Well, it's there for the asking. I must say it's a very rich and long history in Montreal, as I think most of us realize. And there's such a remarkable wealth of stories. A lot of them are contained in newspapers, including the Gazette, which goes back to 1778. It's quite remarkable to go into the old papers, and again, I'm speaking primarily of the Gazette here, and to actually see things like the Battle of Trafalgar reported as a news event. It does take your breath away a bit. Of course, the Battle of Trafalgar is not a Montreal story. It took place on the other side of the ocean. Mm-hmm. But there is an astonishing amount of stuff out there, and you can dig it out. Just about anyone can.
Do you somehow feel like a newspaper archaeologist in a way?
I suppose. One of the things that I do in preparing for various columns is query through the newspapers, the Gazette, the Herald, the Star, the French papers as well. And it's quite astonishing to see sometimes how things don't change. You know, people concerned about health, traffic, even if the traffic is horses and wagons, and yet how certain things are quite a bit different. Again, horses, if you will. We don't have them in the streets any longer.
Now, with the, you're doing a lot of this stuff for your column Second Draft.
Right.
But at what point did you say, or did someone else come to you and say, you know, there's a book here?
A lot of people over the 7 years or so that I've been writing the column have been saying, when are you going to do a book about it? And I think what they probably had in mind was an anthology of columns. I'm not entirely sure why I decided to do something a little different than simply try to see if someone was interested in publishing an anthology. What I have done with this book is expand certain things I talked about in certain columns, but then there's a lot in the book as well that I've never touched in the columns. And it's stuff, incidentally, that is not unknown to historians. It's all there. But I hope that in the book I have written it in an entertaining sort of way that perhaps will shed new light on some of these astonishing events that have happened in our shared past.
What are some of the things, what are the types of things that are in the book that are not in the column, and why have you in the past excluded them from the column?
Second thing first, I haven't consciously excluded them. There is so much to write about, and you know, I only have one column a week, memo to Gazette, see if I can do it twice a week. There's no sense of exclusion there. The first part of your question, give it to me again.
The first part is what is in the book that is not in the column.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
I guess let me approach it in a slightly long-winded way. The book is divided into five different chapters, and I have arbitrarily picked out of the air five different themes for those chapters. One of them happens to be about spies. Various spies who have floated through the city from the 18th century right up to our own day. A couple of those spies, or people involved in espionage, might be a slightly fair way of putting it, are people that I have talked about in the column. There was a professor at McGill University named Raymond Boyer, who was involved in the Gouzenko affair.
Mm.
I wrote a column about him several years ago. It's a delicious story, and I don't know that many people, first of all, know about Boyer's involvement in the first place, and then secondly, what happened to him after it all fell to earth. So I expanded the Boyer story in the chapter on spies. But at the same time, in that chapter, there's stuff that I've never talked about in the column. There were spies roaring around Montreal during the Spanish-American War, if you can believe it. There were others.
Now,
they don't instantly come to mind.
Again, is this information that you've mostly culled from newspaper articles from the various papers of the day?
No. That would be quite unfair to say. I have found in the various newspaper articles information about various incidents.
So it's like a jumping off point by using the papers.
Just so.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's a means of expanding what formal history books have talked about, what other writers have written about, what I've stumbled across in one way or another. And the newspaper articles give a contemporary look at what we now regard as history. I find it fascinating, just fascinating, to go through those old newspaper stories. But those stories are by no means the only source of the information that I use either in the columns or in the book.
What, in your estimation, I mean, since you are so immersed in this, what part of Montreal's history do you think offers the richest part of it, for lack of a better term?
I am particularly fascinated by a period that I hate to admit I don't know as much about as I would like to know. This is,
well, you probably know a lot more than most of us do.
Well, that's kind of you to say. But the period I have in mind is this very, very fluid point in history after the conquest of 1759, 1760, up through into the dawn of the next century, this sort of half century there where the shape of North America was changing very, very rapidly. At one point, you know, for 10, 15, 20 years, Britain was lord of all it surveyed. Then the United States emerged. But its borders were still very fluid, fluid as all get out. There were constitutional changes going on in what's now Canada that would profoundly affect the sort of nation that has finally emerged, and indeed which continues to evolve. However, having said that, that's sort of the dry part of it all. I mean, you know, constitutional history, ho-hum, a real yawn. The thing that makes it come alive for me is when you get involved with some of the people who were floating around as well, the real live people who were living and breathing and shouting at each other. So I hope anyone listening to this this evening is not going to be put off by the book by thinking it's a dry history of constitutional matters, even though my dirty little secret is that I find it quite fascinating.
Well, it's funny you bring that up, the thought of dry history, because I'm fascinated with history, but like so many, I think, of my own generation, I remember history class in high school. Mm-hmm. And to me, that was just death. there was just nothing. I found looking back at history on my own post high school was far more interesting than everything I got out of school.
Yeah.
How do you keep it fresh?
I think, incidentally, that what you're saying about school, the history we learned in school, and is probably right. It may well have changed. I haven't been in high school in many years. It may well have changed. But I think the appreciation that Canadians have of their own history and Montrealers have of their own history is certainly changing in recent years. There's a tremendous number of books that seem to come out every year looking at characters who have walked across the stage of Montreal and of Canada, that are written in a lively fashion that sadly is missing in a variety of formal histories. I think in school the obligation is to give you the basic, to give you the dates, to give you the names, but they don't give you the flesh and blood of it, I'm afraid.
No texture.
Just so.
Yeah.
Just so.
Now, part of the problem I remember when I was in high school is that our history book itself was history. It was a very old text.
Indeed.
We are talking with John Kalbfleisch, who is the author of This Island in Time, Remarkable Tales from Montreal's Past. He will be in town Wednesday, which is September the 17th, at Westmount Public Library, for the launching of the book. It's at 7 p.m., 4574 Sherbrooke Street West. By the way, you can go to my website, peteranthonyholder.com, click on the What's On page for tonight's date. You'll find links to Amazon.com and Amazon.ca, where you can order the book directly. We'll take a quick break, and we'll continue talking with John. This is Montreal's News Talk leader, CJAD 800.
You're listening to Holder Tonight with Peter Anthony Holder on Montreal's News Talk leader, CJAD 800.
Peter Anthony Holder here with you on CJD, and we're talking with John Kalbfleisch, who is the author of This Island in Time, Remarkable Tales from Montreal's Past. It's a book that is published by Véhicule Press, and there will be a book launch this Wednesday at the Westmount Public Library. 7 p.m. is the time. Westmount Public Library is located at 4574 Sherbrooke Street, Sherbrooke Street in Westmount. What are some of the things that even made you go, wow, this is fascinating, this is interesting?
Oh, wow. let me think. That's a hard one, because I must admit I found myself being sucked into each of the different tales on its own merit. In a way, a relatively unimportant one. In, 1882, I guess it was, there was a dreadful smallpox epidemic in Montreal. And there was a suspicion that the drains, the sewers underneath the streets were blocked up and in some way responsible for it all. there was quite a bizarre, I think, publicity stunt, if you will, that was mounted by the City of Montreal and its chief engineer. A couple of reporters, one from the Star, one from the Gazette, were invited on a walking tour. But it was a walking tour through the sewers, thank you very much, of Montreal. So along they went, stumbling along. The chief engineer insisted, I'm here to tell you, that they each light up a cheroot, a cigar, that this would keep the noxious vapors at bay. Well, this doesn't strike me as public health at its finest, but there they were, wandering through, slipping and sliding through the sewers, and all the while they found that the sludge at ankle level was flowing along as stunningly as it should, and there was no evidence to speak of that the sewers were backed up, and the problem lay elsewhere. But here was a fascinating little yarn. I first came across it in reading Michael Bliss's book about the smallpox epidemic. But it leapt off the page at me. I thought, whoa, this is wonderful stuff. Let's find out, let's see what else there is to find out about it. I found some newspaper stories about it and strung it together, and there it is. I think a fascinating yarn. That's a relatively small one in the book. It only takes up a couple of pages.
Given the opportunity, if the City of Montreal invited you down to the sewers as a Gazette reporter, would you go?
With or without the cheroot, I'm not sure. Certainly with boots.
Absolutely. Such a rich history that Montreal has. In doing your research, do you ever come across names of people and suddenly realize, oh, that's why that street is named that, or that area is named this, or...
All the time. But I'll tell you, let me flip that around. Somebody who doesn't have a street named after him, or doesn't have the sort of street named after him that he should. In 1847, there was a dreadful typhus epidemic in Montreal. Irish immigrants, this is well known, Irish immigrants were fleeing the potato famine and coming to Quebec and Montreal and Toronto, and were dying in their thousands. It was an absolutely horrifying story all through that spring and summer and into the fall. And amongst the people who were the real saints of the operation were included amongst them were the various nuns, priests, Protestant ministers, a variety of people helping out. But in addition, the mayor of Montreal, John Easton Mills, an American by birth, but he came up here as a merchant, a banker, and so on, was also highly instrumental in helping these people in any way he possibly could, including, you know, literally getting his hands dirty in the fever sheds, which were down on Point St. Charles, where these poor people were suffering and dying. Eventually, the epidemic began to fade away as the weather turned cold in the fall. But it didn't fade away entirely. And in November, when it was virtually gone, who should fall ill but John Easton Mills, the mayor of Montreal? He suffered for a few days himself, and then he died. It's one of many people who were helping the ill who died, many of whose names we know. But what mystifies me, Montreal is filled with streets, avenues, metro stops, and so on, named after parks, named after former mayors. There's Voie Camille-Anneud over the mountain. There is Honoré-Beaugrain metro stop. There's Rue Vigée downtown. And what is there for John Easton Mills? There's a dinky little one-block street out sort of on the east end, down on the waterfront. It's on the waterfront, but it's some miles away from where he essentially gave his life for these poor, suffering people. I think this is just a crying shame that Mills has not been commemorated more more visibly than he has. However, more happily, there are lots and lots of names in the streets and parks and avenues of the city that that you know. Subscribe to your original question. You know, I'm just trying to think. Drummond, Dorchester, Jean Mance, they're all there. They're all there. They're markers of our shared municipal history.
The city of Montreal, of course, is a port city. Is that one of the reasons it has such a vibrant past? Because such colorful people work their way through Canada by first stopping off here.
I think so. I think so. The city...
And, of course, a lot stayed.
Well, sure.
Yeah.
But I make the argument at one point in the city. Montreal briefly... for several years in the 1840s, was in fact the capital of the country, or Canada was as it was then constituted. And the capital moved away because of unfortunate events that are retailed in the book. But I've always believed that it remains the true capital in a emotional or mythic sense of the country, because it's where, first of all, the two great cultures, the French and English cultures, rub up against each other as they do nowhere else in the country, and it's where so many people, either as Montrealers, have helped to shape the country that we have today and continue to do so. Or they have, as you alluded to a couple of moments ago, they have moved through Montreal and on to other parts of the country and spread, in my romantic view, a little bit of the country elsewhere. So I still like to think of it as the capital of the country because of that role as a fulcrum that you mentioned at the outset. Yes,
and we have just about a minute or so. I'm just curious to know, in your estimation, in putting a book like this together, how much of a role did religion play?
Oh, tremendous amount, tremendous amount. It was originally founded in 1642 as a religious colony, not like so many of the towns and cities in what's now became the 13 colonies as commercial ventures, as plantations of new settlers in order to generate income for their investors back in England. No, this was different. Montreal was founded as a religious settlement. The French coming out here, de Maisonneuve and his companions, were here with a specific intent to convert the Indians to Christianity. That vocation, if you will, eventually, in fact, fairly soon, had to compete with a growing commercial vocation for the city. But the religious impulse, nonetheless, has continued throughout the centuries to our present day. Just a couple of weeks ago, I had the great good fortune to be taken on a tour of the Hotel Dieu, which is now up on Pine Avenue, and the very place where the ashes, or what remains of the ashes of Jean Mance, to this day remain. When you wander past those old buildings that trace a heritage back close to 400 years, you're constantly reminded that yes, the religious impulse is very central to the history of the city.
The book is called This Island in Time, Remarkable Tales from Montreal's Past, written by John Kalfleisch. There is a a launching of the book Wednesday at Westmount Public Library, 4574 Sherbrooke Street. And it's published, of course, by Vehicule Press. You can go to my website, peteranthonyholder.com. Click on the What's on Patriot Tonight's date. You'll find links to Amazon.com and Amazon.ca, where you can order the book directly. I thank you very much, John, for being on the program with us.
It's been a delight for me.
This is Montreal's News Talk Leader, CJAD 800.